Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Lion by Hildy McQueen, narrated by Mari Morrison. A few notes. Dear listener, this fictional story takes place at the beginning of the 17th century in the Scottish Hebrides, isles off the Isle of Skye's western coast. In the 1500s, lordship over the Hebrides collapsed, and the power was given to clan chiefs. The MacNeill in Barra, the MacDonald, Clan Ranald, in South Uist, the Ujden in North Uist, the MacLeod, the Isles of Harris and Lewis. For this series, I have moved the clans around a bit to help the story work better. The clans' locations in my books are as follows. The MacNeill will remain in Barra. The MacDonald, Clan Ranald, is moved to North Uist. The Ujden resides in Benbecula. The MacLeod remains in the Isles of Harris and Lewis. My fictional clan, Clan Ross, will be layered over South Uist. Chapter 1. Dún Laitre, Keep Ross, Isle of South Uist, Summer 1601. The loud argument between the men that stood before him did not deter others in the great hall from trying to be heard above their shouts. Another group of people stood in a circle to the side, yelling insults. Behind the group, a pair of men were tied at the wrists, with guards standing watch, as the binds did not keep them from kicking at each other. A fire had been lit in the hearth that morning, while it was still cold in the room, and now the combination of the heat and stench of unwashed bodies crammed into the space made it overwhelmingly difficult to concentrate. Darrick Ross pushed back a lock of blonde hair that fell over his brow and leaned forward in an attempt to hear what the supplicants before him were arguing about. But he was barely able to decipher their issues, since both yelled at each other more than trying to explain their complaints to him. When he could not get the men to settle, he looked to his brother Stuart, who was leaning forward, staring at the men, as if attempting to read their lips. His brother's hazel gaze moved from one man to the other, while he fiddled with an arrow in his hands. "I cannot hear what is being said. Is it possible to remove some of the people to another space?" Darrick asked Cairn McKinney, a member of his council, who sat to his right. The older man looked from one side of the room to the other, and Darrick did the same, taking in the desperate expressions of those present. Every person in the room was looking to him to somehow fix their situation. Most were dirty and much too thin, with the pale, hollow eyes of someone with no hope. Hunger he could help with. Disillusionment and distrust were another story. Upon realizing Darrick was distracted, the men in front of him became furious and began screaming at him directly. "Do you even hear me, Lord?" one yelled. "You do not care, do you?" the other screamed. "Enough!" Darrick roared and stood to his full height, towering over the men from the high board. "I am your laird, and will not tolerate insolence." At Darrick's exclamation, the room quieted. The silence was short-lived, because just then, on the far side of the crowded room, a fight broke out. The pair who'd been bound had somehow gotten loose and were now brawling. When they fell onto a table, the men there just cheered and shoved them away. The guardsmen in the room pushed their way through the crowd to the fighters, pulled the men apart, and dragged them out to the courtyard. People jeered loudly at the end of their entertainment. Darrick motioned for one of his personal guards to come closer.
I want 20 warriors to come at once. Enough of this unruliness. Take those in the back, half of the room outside. Except for the women and children, they can remain.
In short order, the warriors entered the room. Groups of people were herded out, some peacefully, while others had to be beaten over the head with flat swords or prodded forward with shields. Taking advantage of the distraction, a group of women rushed up and tugged at Darek's tunic to get his attention. One woman spoke for the group, tears streaming down her face. She trembled when he looked at her.
"My Laird, we've come to beg for food. Our bairns are hungry, our elderly are dying, and your reply is to have the guardsmen beat and drag us away."
Darek groaned, but kept from raising his voice. Already the women shrunk back each time he looked from one to the other. He had given specific instructions that no women be taken out and no child pushed away. But, of course, that would not be the story they told once they returned to their villages. Even bundled up with cloaks and with blankets around their bodies, it was evident the women were too thin, their faces gaunt, their eyes dull. One held a child against her chest that clung to its mother while crying softly.
"I will not send you away hungry. Gather all the bairns, women, and any elderly who are here, and go to the dining hall. Food will be brought,"
Darek said, and motioned for his youngest brother, Gideon, part of the warrior force, to come forward.
"Ensure that Mother and Ella are aware that these people need to be fed."
At 8 and 20, Gideon had turned from a lanky lad into a well-toned, muscled man. With dark wavy hair and the same hazel-coloured eyes as him, no one would question his lineage. His brother nodded and raced to find their mother and sister.
"There may be too many to feed on such short notice,"
Cairn, the councilman, neared and declared. At Darek's glare, he held both hands up.
"I only say what I see."
"Go and eat,"
Darek urged the women who remained in place, looking between him and Cairn. They hurried toward the dining hall, telling others as they walked by to follow them to get a meal. Most of the women and elderly in the great hall shuffled out, urged by the prospect of a good meal. The few that remained were either quarrelling or standing behind their husbands or fathers, who were busy complaining, loudly, about the injustices done against them by Darek's late father. The argumentative men, who had waited impatiently for him to return, were each given a stipend and sent to see the stable master to get a sack of oats each for their livestock. Another group comprised of four farmers approached and demanded answers on how they were to defend their land. Unfulfilled promises by Darek's late father were repeated. One man's ragged face contorted with rage.
"Laird, we come to see you to ask for help, which has been sorely lacking. For months now, we've struggled to feed our wives and children. You must understand, Laird, our land is no longer fertile. Your late father kept us from rotating the fields, demanding that we plant on all of them at once. During the last harvest, our farms produced meagre crops. After taxes, there was nothing left to take care of our own families."
At a loss as to what should be done for the people who looked to him for answers, Darek scanned the great hall. Too many still remained. Those that had been escorted out by the guards would return and bring with them more demands for compensation or help. "Inventory will be done of the grain reserves. You must give us time," Stuart interjected. "For now, each family will receive 2 sacks of grain, a pair of sheep, and 4 chickens.
There is much to be done. I ask that you give me time,
Darach said, meeting each man's gaze.
I am not my father. I wish to work with you and hear what you have to say.
The men exchanged questioning looks. One finally spoke.
We will return in a month's time. Nay, I will ride out to your land. For now, prepare the portion of land that you think will produce the most. Taxes will not be collected until after your second harvest.
The farmers' faces brightened.
Thank you, Laird,
they said, and hurried out to collect their allotments. Darach leaned toward his scribe.
Mark a reminder to meet with the farmers.
Just then, the men who'd been brawling were dragged up to the front by guardsmen. One was bleeding from his nose and held his head back. The other had a split lip and cut above his eye, blood dripping down the side of his face.
Laird, one of the guardsmen said, these men are fighting about poaching.
He recognised them. They'd stolen cattle back and forth from each other for years.
Darach studied the men. The one with the bleeding nose was very plump, fat, really.
A woman, just as plump, stood with him. The other man was healthy and heavy as well. He turned to Stuart.
Where are their lands?
Near the river. They share the lands just north of the farmers that were just speaking to you. Facing the bleeding men, he studied one and then the other. The room quieted as people became curious to see what happened.
Where do you get your grain?
Confused, the men looked at one another. Finally, one replied,
from the miller in the village, like everyone else. Ye both have plenty of butter, because you have milk from cows. I presume you have chickens and sheep as well.
Both nodded.
Why is everyone around you hungry?
His nose had stopped bleeding, so the man looked Darach in the eyes.
I am the provider of meat and milk for the laird. It is I that has the honour to ensure your family is well fed, my laird.
The man made a show of bowing.
What about ye?
Darach asked the other man.
Ye have the same privileges, I presume.
I do not, my laird, the man replied.
Unlike him?
He glared at the other man.
I am an honest man. I am not called to serve my laird except to provide a yearly tax. I ensure that I feed the families of those that work for me.
Darach looked about the room.
How many here raise livestock?
A smattering of hands rose, and Darach motioned for them to approach. Once the men were lined up, he noted that unlike the two who'd been fighting, the rest of the men were not as plump.
Every month, a different man will provide for the keep and will be paid for it.
The men exchanged excited looks.
As far as schedule, you will meet with my brother Gideon to be assigned a time.
Darach hesitated for a beat.
Those in dire need will go first.
The man with the cut above his eye waved his arms.
My laird, if I may be so bold, there are 14 of us. That means 2 of us cannot serve you. Neither of ye will serve me for a year, he told the 2 well-fed men.
The men stared at him with identical gaping wide mouths and eyes, and the wife of one of them swooned. It was late in the day before the crowd in the room had finally thinned enough for last meal to be served. People had been sent home with enough food and grain to last them for a few weeks. Herders were instructed to gift each family with a goat, sheep or cow, so that they could have milk. Chickens were also distributed. The council would be discussing how to ensure the clan's homes would be fortified enough for the upcoming cold weather of winter. Darach stood and stretched.
I need to go for a walk before last meal.
Without waiting for anyone to remind him, there were still matters that needed to be heard and things which needed to be discussed, he stalked across the room and out the front door. In the courtyard, people climbed on wagons and horseback riders mounted. Other clans' people walked to and from a makeshift table where his scribe noted who had been provided with what. Down the side of the house, there were steps that led to a lower area. Darek descended the slope and continued down until reaching the shoreline of a loch. At the water's edge, hidden from sight, he lowered to his knees and bent forward, covering his face with both hands. It wasn't as much to pray, but an effort to seek the fortitude to continue. At becoming Laird, he'd not been aware of the magnitude of the issues he would face. Upon his father's death, the truth had come to light of how horrible a leader his father had been. People hadn't come to seek help or guidance for fear of repercussions. Those who had not been in his father's favour now openly complained, the grievances ringing of truth and injustice. How had he been so blind? Somehow his father had been so controlling of the people that they'd forced smiles and never showed any kind of discord. Now he learned that they were under threat of death for any misdeed his father considered treasonous. How had it come to be that to ask for food or help was viewed as treason, and therefore people were on the edge of starvation and death? Those that had livestock and those who grew crops were not allowed to share in case the laird had need of it. While food rotted in the keep's storehouses, people outside the gates starved. Fury filled him to the point that screams caught in his throat. Even the soft lapping of the water did little to soothe him. Senses overwhelmed, all he could do was to take deep breaths and expel them. When his hound caught up with him and lowered to its haunches, Darek reached over and scratched its head. Seeming reassured all was well, the animal rose and began running along the shoreline, picking up a stick and playing. He watched the dog, jealous over its lack of concern. He'd originally named the black hound Abyss. But in truth, the name did no justice, as the animal had a friendly, jovial nature, so now he called him Albi. The cold air swept across the surface of the water, bringing with it the smell of the nearby sea. Realizing it had been a long time since he'd allowed himself to just be, he took a deep breath of the salty air. Stuart, who was the closest to him out of his six siblings, called to him. Darek, what are you doing? By the time Stuart neared and then followed his line of sight to the loch, his brother needed no explanation. Why was father so cruel to his people? Darek asked. Perhaps he didn't see it as cruelty, but as a way to manage everyone. Darek studied Stuart, his brother's dark brown hair blowing across the chiselled, serious face. I cannot believe that. We have only to listen to them, to see them, to know how horribly they've been treated. Stuart straightened his shoulders and held his head high. We can argue every point of how things have been done in the past. It will not help those people now, he said, motioning toward the house. What matters now is that we help them, set a new standard, blaze a new trail. Pushing his shoulder-length blonde hair away from his face, Darek met his brother's unwavering gaze. Only with ye and our family beside me can I do this. Stuart's lips curved. With each day that passes, he becomes stronger. Ye will be a great leader, Darek. I have little doubt.
So, a bit of scepticism remains then?
Darek asked with a pointed look. Stuart returned the look with a lift to his right eyebrow.
Ye are far from perfect, brother. If one were to search for utter perfection, one has to only look at me.
Unable to keep from it, Darek chuckled. Albie, hearing his laugh, raced to him, dragging a long branch. He bent to take the branch from the dog, broke a smaller piece from it, and threw it for the dog to happily retrieve.
Let us head back.
Last meal in the family dining room was a quiet affair. In the great hall, the people who had been invited to remain so that their qualms could be heard the following day were fed a simpler fare.
Duncan and Caelan should be here,
Ella, the youngest of the siblings, said, referring to their brothers.
Duncan should be helping you.
Darek gave her an indulgent look.
They have their own responsibilities in their region. There is the threat from Clan MacNeil, and the fact the people there are also revolting upon learning of our father's death.
One of the things Darek was thankful for was that there were seven of them, six brothers and one sister, with whom he could divide the burden of what they had been left with.
What of Clan Uisden?
Stuart asked, his hazel eyes flashing angrily. They are refusing to allow me to visit, and returned my messenger with threats of harm if we send him back. I am set to marry Fenella Uisden in the spring. Gideon let out a bark of laughter.
I would not count on the marriage taking place. She is no doubt relieved, do you not think?
Everyone was silent and awaited Stuart's response. Of all the brothers, he had the least fiery temperament, and the possibility of him losing control was low. However, Gideon knew exactly how to goad his brother to anger. Stuart's chair crashed to the floor when he pushed back. He quickly rounded the table and wrapped his hands around Gideon's neck.
You talk too much.
Undaunted by his brother's attack, Gideon punched Stuart in the stomach twice, stealing his wind with the second hard punch. Stuart released Gideon's neck and bent forward, blowing out. Just as he was to straighten, Gideon's fist connected with the side of his face.
Bastard!
Stuart yelled, flying at his younger brother, who tried to flee but failed when Stuart grabbed his tunic. When both landed on the floor, their mother had had enough. She picked up the pitcher of ale and poured it over them.
Stop this at once!
Lady Mariel Ross was not at all shocked or distressed by her son's actions. Instead, she returned to her seat and continued eating. She gave Darek a warm look.
I have every trust in ye, son. The obstacles before ye may seem overwhelming, but know that ye have the family's support.
She slid a look to Stuart and Gideon, each and every one of us. Gideon also returned to his chair to eat, but Stuart, drenched in ale, remained standing. Obviously, their mother knew who needed to cool down.
I do have news, his mother said, in a tone that made his stomach sink.
Her face softened.
It isn't anything bad. Perhaps just a bit distressing.
God's foot, mother, Ella exclaimed. Tell us already. I received a message today from Lady MacDonald.
What about?
Darek asked. His mother and Lady MacDonald were childhood friends. Both born MacNeils, they had maintained correspondence, even when their husbands were at odds. She wishes to visit with me. Either she comes here, or I go there. I know it isn't the best of times, but I do wish for a reprieve. Darek shook his head. You cannot go there. The Uisden is threatening our northern shores. I have not heard from the MacDonald in months.
I do not care, Lady Ross said, lifting her nose. I will meet with Aileen. She can come here.
It is much too unstable a time, Mother. If they come here, the MacDonald will learn of the discord with our people. He could use the information against us.
Stuart spoke next. You cannot travel there. We cannot afford to lose the guardsmen to escort you right now.
When Lady Ross and Ella exchanged looks, Darragh let out a groan.
What?
Gideon asked. Why are you making a sound of pain?
Do you not see it?
Darragh asked. Lady MacDonald is already travelling here.
Am I correct, Mother?
He glared at his mother.
Arrangements were made. I couldn't very well tell her not to come.
He let out a long breath, not wishing to yell.
You very well could have.
His mother brightened. This is actually the perfect time for you to get to know her daughter Beatrice, who comes with her. A marriage between our clans would be very beneficial.
Laird, for only half a year, he'd not had time to think of much more than the mountain of troubles his father had left him with.
It took me this long to convince the clan they would not be punished for bringing their issues to me. I still have to work on what is needed for the villagers, farmers and guardsmen. I am much too busy to begin to consider marriage.
Darragh shook his head. Stuart, who'd calmed, lowered to a chair.
Besides, we should concentrate on my marriage. I am not sure we should align with Clan Uisden as yet. Not until I understand where their loyalties lay.
Darragh met his brother's gaze.
Be patient.
Stuart nodded, his jaw tight. Darragh was tired but couldn't rest. He paced the length of his bedchamber, too restless to get into bed. The rap at the door brought welcome relief to his tangled thoughts, and he called out for whoever it was to enter. Upon the door opening and the woman entering, Darragh considered what to do. In truth, he was in no mood for lovemaking. The woman, Lilia, had often shared his bed, but as of late, their times together had become less and less frequent.
My Laird?
Lilia neared, her gaze sliding down his body.
Today has been most tiring for you, has it not?
It was, but I am not sure I want to be.
He stopped talking when Lilia's hand clutched his shaft through the fabric of his breeches. Immediately his body responded, ready for relief in whatever form it came.
Lilia, I cannot possibly satisfy you today,
Darragh said. Despite obviously going hard, the rest of his body felt as if stones were tied to his ankles and hung from his wrists.
Allow me to put you to bed, then,
the woman cooed. Lilia was well versed in seeing to a man's needs and had been his lover for the last year. He was sure she slept with others, but Darragh turned a blind eye, as he didn't care what she did when not with him. The way he saw it, Lilia was intelligent enough to know he would never offer marriage. Other than ensuring she was provided for, he allowed her freedom. Voluptuous, with waist-length brown hair, Lilia was enticing. Her almond-shaped eyes that lifted at the outer corners gave her an exotic look. She poured water into a pot by the fireplace and turned the lever so that it hovered over the fire to warm. Taking Darragh's hand, Lilia guided him to sit on the bed and then kneeled to remove his boots and stockings.
You should not allow yourself to become so exhausted. There are others who could shoulder some of your burden.
Darek nodded.
Ye are correct, but as...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?